My guest is historian Bill McKinnon, wrote a book, At Sword's Point, a study of the Utah War, which we've been discussing here, and its relation to the purchase of Alaska. It's published by the University of Oklahoma Press, the United States' largest, biggest publisher of American history. And he's got some volumes here locally. If you want to buy the book, $40, you can call me after the program, 805-452-2428, 805-452-CHAD, or mark@radiorealestate.com. We're just going to wrap up. Apparently, so we're in around 1857, 1858. It was proposed to sell Alaska from the Tsar to President Buchanan, but apparently it was a 10-year escrow. It didn't happen until 1867. Why was that?
Mark, the American Civil War came along and complicated it. So it was only after the Civil War that, when things settled down in the United States, that the State Department returned to negotiations with the Russians. So Russia sold Alaska to the U.S. in 1867 for $7.2 million.
Which, in today's dollars, I looked up, about $125 million. Back then, about 2 cents an acre. The best real estate deal in the history of the American West, but that's until we analyze the Louisiana Purchase. So, okay, so we were talking about Alaska, and then we were talking about Brigham Young, who the Russian ambassador heard that they could be going to Alaska, and the British heard they could be going to Vancouver Island. You said that Joseph Smith had initially asked Queen Victoria about settling Vancouver Island. So how does British Columbia tie in from there?
Well, as you indicated, the rumors were out that the Mormons might flee the pressure from the U.S. Army by going to the Pacific coast. The Russians heard Alaska, the British heard Vancouver's Island. And there had been a history 10 years earlier with Joseph Smith considering a flight from Illinois to Vancouver's Island rather than to Utah. And those rumors were reactivated 10 years later during the Utah War. At that point, the British possessions on the West Coast were in the hands of the Hudson's Bay Company. They were administering the area, and it was huge, but there were almost no British settlements on the mainland, and there were a few little settlements on Vancouver's Island, opposite what's now the city of Vancouver, just kind of in a cluster right at the tip of the island, opposite what's now the city of Vancouver. And when the British heard the rumors about a Mormon descent on Vancouver's Island, they decided that the Hudson's Bay Company couldn't properly defend the area. So Queen Victoria's government in 1857-58 took that whole area out of the hands of the Hudson's Bay Company, and they created the Crown Colony of British Columbia. And that included the mainland along the Pacific coast and inland for a couple hundred miles, and the island of Vancouver. And then they sent in the Royal Navy and the Royal Marines to garrison the area in order to actually defend it if the Mormons decided to arrive. The other reason for creating the Crown Colony of British Columbia was gold was discovered there in the spring of 1858. And along with the rumors of a large Mormon migration to Vancouver Island, there was the reality of a huge stampede from California to Vancouver Island and the Fraser River, where it flowed past what's now the city of Vancouver into the Pacific. And in order to bring order out of chaos, the British government took it out of the hands of the Hudson's Bay Company, organized it as a crown colony, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, or their early predecessors, were sent in to restore order there. The British government also had heard rumors that the Mormons might head to Hawaii. Hawaii was an independent kingdom, and the Mormons had had missionaries there since 1850. And the British were picking up rumors and anxiety about a Mormon descent on Honolulu Harbor, as well as Vancouver Island or Russian America. So in order to deal with that, the Royal Navy sent a frigate, HMS Calypso, to Honolulu Harbor and dropped anchor there to fend off any unwanted Mormon invasion of the Hawaiian Islands, which, as I indicated was a rumor also. So you had all kinds of real estate possibilities in play, Mark. Too bad you weren't handling the deal. It probably would have gone through.
Well, you mentioned Mitt Romney's grandfather. Maybe my grandfather was involved. I guess Bill McKinnon, historian now residing in Montecito. That's just an amazing chain of events. But obviously Buchanan beat the Mormons and Brigham Young in this war and ended up breaking up Utah, as you mentioned at the beginning, into six other states. But the Mormons did not leave Utah officially until the 1880s?
Well, they did, yes, and they didn't leave in their entirety in the 1880s. They sent missionaries to establish colonies, or colonias, they call them, in
Mexico?
In Chihuahua, Coahuila, and Sonora. That was in the 1880s. With the Romney family, what happened was that Mitt Romney's great-grandfather, Charles Henry Wilken, who was a Prussian, migrated to the United States in the spring of 1857, couldn't find a job, so he enlisted in the Army for a term of 5 years in the spring of 1857. He was an accomplished soldier. He had won the Iron Cross in the Prussian Army, and he had that in his pocket when he joined the U.S. Army in 1857. The regiment that Wilken was in ended up at Fort Bridger in October of 1857, heading for the Salt Lake Valley, and Charles Henry Wilken, Mitt Romney's great-grandfather, decided to desert from the U.S. Army at that point, and he did. Crossed into the Mormon lines and was accepted by the Mormon settlements as one of their own. He converted to Mormonism in December of 1857 and stayed the rest of his life in Utah. The Romney family went to Mexico in the 1880s, including Mitt Romney's father, George, in order to avoid prosecution under the anti-polygamy laws that were passed. When the U.S. Army went out to Utah in 1857-58, there wasn't any federal statute against polygamy. And the first anti-polygamy law that was passed was signed by President Lincoln in 1862, and when Lincoln signed it, he announced that he wasn't going to enforce it. But after the Civil War, especially when Grant became president, the attitudes about polygamy tightened, and Congress passed a lot of legislation prohibiting it.
I never liked Grant. Hey, we're pretty much at the end of the program. My guest is Bill Binn.
So the Romney family fled to Mexico in the 1880s to avoid prosecution for polygamy, came back after the Mexican Revolution in 1910, and that's why Mitt Romney's father, George, was born in Mexico but brought up in Utah and then gravitated to Washington, D.C.
I'm surprised that they didn't use... You got to admit, America, we like to forgive people. So his great-grandfather deserted the American Army, and then Mitt Romney becomes senator and runs for president. Great story. My guest has been Bill McKinnon. He's a local historian. Well, he's not a local historian. He happens to live locally. And he wrote this great book that we discussed today in part. And it's available at the University of Oklahoma Press. Or you could buy it locally, 805-452-2428, $40, a little bit off the retail price. Bill, thank you so very much. We're way out of time, but I got to ask you a quick question. You kept calling it Vancouver's Island. Is it still with a plural, or is it now just Vancouver Island?
It's now called Vancouver Island, but back in the mid-1800s, it was Vancouver apostrophe S. It was named after Peter Vancouver.
Oh, very good.
But the island had an apostrophe S on the end of it for years.
And lastly, what does Alaska have in common with Coca-Cola?
Tell me.
In 1959, Alaska became a state, and that was the first time that Coke could raise the price of 5 cents per bottle since it was first bottled in 1891. Bill McKinnon, thanks for joining us.
Okay, Mark, my pleasure.
Okay, the rest of you stay tuned for the weekly multiple listing sales update.